Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at the weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. And tell you what, Steve is with me right now. John Martin is finishing up teaching his class. It finishes up in a few minutes, and he'll be with us probably right after our news break coming up. But in the meantime, Steve's here to talk about what's going on with the climate and what's going on with the weather, and he's also more than happy to answer your weather climate questions. So I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And if you have if you have some weather photos, we always love those weather photos. Post them up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'll certainly be taking a look at those photos as they come up. And I tell you, I'm glad I wasn't out east this last week.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad I wasn't flying out east because we would probably be stuck. But it was kind of fun seeing all that. You know, a lot of people were posting various pictures of the snowfall, and it was looked pretty amazing.
One place, was it Virginia that had 40 inches or 40 plus inches?
Yeah, yeah. And I think D.C., I guess there's some controversy going on right now, but had something like 20 inches. So,
well, there's some controversy about how they measured.
Yeah, and, you know, I didn't quite catch it. I just got a snippet of it on the public radio this morning, and I didn't realize that was going on. So I'll have to go check it. Measuring snowfall is really hard to do, but
it depends on the moisture level, I suppose, in the air.
Yep, and then just measuring it, you know, in terms of, because you can see it drifts. You know, if you after we have any snowfall, as you walk around in your backyard or your front yard, you can see some places it's, you know, maybe only be a few inches, and in other places it's drifted into a foot. So it's a tough measurement to make.
But yeah, and if it's a wet snow, it's going to be compacted.
It's going to be compacted, right, yep. Yep. Or if you get, you know, like we had in December, right, we had some snowfall with some freezing rain associated with it, and that's going to further compact it as well.
You know, it was always, we always joked in the past about, well, you know, if they get a snowflake in Washington, D.C., it kind of shuts the place down.
It sure does.
And that hasn't changed, has it? I mean,
it has not changed. And part of the problem is they just don't have the equipment to remove it. So they have no place to put it or pick it up or plow it or anything like that. I mean, I was talking to, I was on a telecon with some folks from D.C. this morning, and, you know, that whole area is shut down. And you know, I asked them, because they live in D.C., so do you think the government's going to open up tomorrow? And then both of them said, nope.
So it's going to be a while yet.
It's going to be a while because, you know, they just can't move it around. I mean, the above ground rails are still closed down. You know, subways open underground, but that only gets you so far in the D.C. area. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. But, you know, on the other hand, if they spend a lot of money buying the equipment like we have in the Midwest to remove snow, then a lot of times it'll probably just sit in the garage
there.
And that'll be a waste of money.
That's the problem.
That's
you
the problem.
You have to kind of weigh this old cost benefit.
That's right, yep. And the key is, I think the politicians have learned their lesson to get out ahead of the event, you know, so you knew pretty much D.C. was going to be closed down on Monday by Friday. Because this storm was pretty well forecast.
And it was called, what did they call it, Jonas?
They called it Jonas, yeah. They're naming these storms now. There was a controversial about that a couple of years ago when they started doing that. And who has the official designation to be
able
to
do that? Who has the naming rights?
Who has the naming rights, exactly.
Oh, my God. Well, what causes something like this?
In a storm like this, it's, you know, the unique thing about this storm is as we get these storms develop, they're just classical mid-latitude cyclones with cold fronts and warm fronts. But these, as they move up along the coastline, there's a good temperature gradient between the warm ocean current of the Gulf Stream and the cold land. You know, it's been pretty cold out there since December. And that temperature gradient helps invigorate some dynamics. And then the warm ocean temperatures and then the structure was pulling a lot of water vapor up into the storm. And so to get snowfall, you need water vapor. You need to convert that water into precipitation, and this storm did that pretty nicely.
And, you know, I was talking with a colleague this morning who said, you know, this hasn't really been a winter at all for Wisconsin. She said, I don't want 40 inches, but, we haven't, don't seem to be getting the kind of snowfall that we should be getting.
Yeah, you know, and December, it was a little bit above average, but January, we've certainly been below. Yeah, we had that one good storm at the end that put us, so on average right now for the wintertime, we're pretty close to normal. But yeah, January, you know, December was so warm that I've been thinking January has got to be below normal in terms of temperature. It's certainly below normal in terms of precipitation. But in terms of temperature, we're actually at about normal.
Doesn't, we are?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way. But that, I think it's because December was so warm.
And what about, and I think, well, there was enough snow. Was there enough snow on the ground to kind of limit the amount of the depth of the frost?
That's a good question. You know, I'm trying to think around the city. There's still good snowfall around on the land surface from that December storm that we had. So that might be keeping it warm. I haven't looked at ground temperatures.
And I've brought this up before, but I just wonder, I can't remember now if the funeral directors and cemetery officials around Wisconsin used to do a report, and I haven't seen that report now in several years, and maybe it's just not being done anymore.
But you would think they would do it. They'd be the ones to be able to do it on a routine basis.
One of the great extension soil scientists, Art Peterson, used to come on the show every once in a while and report on that, especially in the spring, because he was pretty good at predicting flood.
Yeah, that frozen ground
flood. Depended a lot on how much frost was in the ground.
Yeah, if that ground is frozen and it rains in the springtime, you know it's not penetrating. It's going to run and flood.
Renee wondered about on Facebook about El Nino and what that might have, if it's going to have any effect on the coming summer.
Probably not. I mean, the forecast for the El Nino looking into the springtime and the summertime is weakening, so it's beginning to weaken. It's usually, you know, for us, has led to less snowfall, and particularly in upstate Wisconsin, and certainly we're seeing that. We're below normal in general. So, but in the springtime, summertime, we're seeing that it's weakening back to normal conditions, so there probably won't be an impact.
Okay. You can join in, too, with your questions, weather, climate questions. Steve Ackerman, our guest right now. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at UW-Madison and is a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. So great to have him along. John Martin, professor, will be joining us after our news break. But a question about climate or weather, we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. See the weather in... I always kind of watch the weather in Saskatchewan because I spend some time there every year, and it's pretty darn cold. Or it's been,
yeah,
and it's always cold up there.
It's always cold, but it's.
But this year, it seems to be going back to sort of the temperatures of some years back.
Yeah, the normal type winters of there being
minus
cold in the,
30 or whatever, right, minus 25.
And the question is, will that find its way to us?
Well, and usually we get their weather.
Yep, and that's why we've been a little cold in January. Well, that Arctic air up north has spilled down. Although, again, as I just said, it seems cold, but it's actually, this is within 1 degree of the normal 30-year average temperature for January.
Well, we have some callers online, and again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. The rest of the winter outlook is, how is that?
So the rest of the winter outlook going into February is... above normal temperatures, which usually is in agreement with when we have a strong El Nino, as we currently do. And precipitation is, they're predicting a little bit below normal. Well, not a little bit. They're predicting the below normal type of precipitation, although the confidence in that isn't as strong as the confidence in above average temperatures.
So it's going to be warmer.
It's going to be warmer. than normal. Yep. And again, just to remind you, because we think it's cold in January, we're at about our normal temperature right now.
You know, there was something else in January, as I'm thinking about the month now, the January hurricane.
Oh, yeah. That was odd.
That was odd, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Alex, I think it was.
Alexa.
Oh, was it Alexa?
Was it Alexa or... No, Alex. You're right. Alex, yeah.
So isn't that kind of unique or different to have a hurricane?
It's definitely different and not what we would normally expect. I mean, the hurricane season doesn't start until June and then it goes to November. We have had, believe it or not, January hurricanes before, but the last one was in 1955. Wow. And that was called Alice, if I remember right. So it's not very common, but the situations were just right with relatively warm waters, not really warm waters, but a cold atmosphere up above that led to a lot of instability and allowed the thing to form.
Mm. Tim in Waukesha up next. Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I have a comment and a question also. The comment is, now, although we know that we're below normal for snowfall for December, I had heard, I think our local weatherman said that we were almost at record for participation because we had so much rain in December. So are we at normal or below normal as far as water for the year? And the question I have is, how much snow is there in the Hayward Cable area, and does he think that'll affect the ski race this year?
Ah, I'll tell you what, we'll ponder that. We'll ponder that. We've got two questions for you, and Tim, we'll answer those questions, but first we need to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we will be back with our guests. You stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at climate and weather with our weather guys. I'm Larry Mueller, and our weather guys, of course, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies, and John Martin, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at the UW-Madison. And John just joins us from his class. Great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Larry.
And, you know, before we get started with some of the questions that we've got in front of us, I think we ought to be congratulating John. Steve, in December, maybe you can talk about this, the Edward Lorenz Teaching Award.
Excellent. Yep, so our professional society, the American Meteorological Society, gives out the, you know, honors for our society, so it's a national competition, mm-hmm. and John was the recipient this year for all the excellent work he does, not just in the classroom, but mentoring.
Oh, congratulations. Thank you very much, both of you. And I want to point out, in response to Steve's kind words here, that he won this exact same award several years ago, so there's two of us sitting here.
Doesn't happen very often.
No,
actually.
I don't think so. They've been so awarded by the society, so it's a great feeling personally, and it's a great feeling to have such a colleague as Steve in our department. I think is the only one other department has two winners, as far as I understand.
That is very, very cool. Well, congrats to both of you. And in the meantime, we might as well answer some questions.
if we can answer them correctly.
Yeah, right.
Live up to the award.
We had a call just before the news wondering about the precipitation in December. And whether or not it was higher, it was average, or was
so
it?
So the average precipitation amount, so not necessarily snowfall, was slightly above average for the month of December. Mm. And for January, we're below average.
Yeah, okay. And in December, we had one fairly
substantial... We had one good storm.
And we had one substantial rain event in the early part of the month. Remember, it was over an inch, I think,
or right. something.
Yeah. Unusually heavy rain in December. So that might have been what got the total equivalent over the average, but the snow in the southern part of the state anyway was quite well below normal.
Yeah. And actually we didn't have frozen ground then either, so the rain took that soil.
That's right.
Took it right into the soil, which is great. And the caller also wondered about Hayward, the Birkebeiner race in Hayward, which is, when is it? It's coming up.
It's coming up in the beginning of February, right?
Yeah, it's usually early February.
Is it like Super Bowl weekend or something, or close to it?
It may be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they only have, right now, about 4 inches or so of snowfall up there.
Is that all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, let's hope for another big storm, although John and I were talking during the break here that you know, our concerns about the lake freezing actually didn't come out too well. We were wondering if it was going to be still open.
Right.
But they froze over pretty quick.
It did look to me today before I went to class, I'm looking, always looking far ahead in the forecast just in case anything interesting appears in the guidance. And I think it was at about 10 or 11 days, maybe 9 or 10 days. A chance for, you know, a sizable snow for the state, 4 or 5 inches in many locations. But that's so far out that one has to take that with a
grain of salt.
Yeah, grain of salt. Yeah.
Well, Pete in La Crosse has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Pete. Thanks for calling.
Good afternoon to Professor Zell. The world CO2 level at Mauna Loa now is just over 400 parts per million. Hmm. But I find it interesting that in the big cities like Paris, it's hundreds of parts per million higher than that. Hmm. And the merchants of fear and uncertainty and doubt, they all claim that CO2 is natural. But nobody's talking about why the big cities where nature has its greatest influence have much higher CO2 levels. So I guess I've got a couple questions here. Why is this not being talked about more as far as the big cities being home to much more CO2? And I'm wondering if there's a possibility of putting more CO2 sensors in big cities, put them online, so we can actually see the day-to-day effect of what we're doing to the world.
That's a good question. I think there may be an underlying assumption that the community, our community's made that hasn't been well explained, and that is that Mauna Loa is such a really precious site because it's so remote. It's far from big cities. It's at a high elevation. So it gives us a fairly unpolluted version of what the, and the atmosphere is so well mixed in the lowest 80 or so kilometers of its depth that it gives us a really pristine measure of how much carbon dioxide really is in the atmosphere without the effect of cities or forested areas or other places like that, which do have a fairly impressive local impact on the carbon dioxide content. So when trying to gauge how that content is changing and then how it might affect the global climate, one doesn't want to actually focus on what's going on in the cities because that is going to give a skewed view. So the Mauna Loa observation is the least skewed of all of the global observations that are being made, and therefore it's the most referenced one.
Yeah. But is it worth it to keep track, though, of what's going on in the cities?
Yeah, it sure is. But it doesn't lead us to intensify the level of concern just because Paris, correctly, as the caller points out, has much higher levels of carbon dioxide. That's because there's a lot of cars in Paris. There are no cars on Mauna Loa. That's one example. Mm-hmm. So, it doesn't change our view of what's happening with the climate just because there are local hot spots like Paris or Boston or New York.
All right. Pete, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Bob in Minocqua, excuse me. I was going to say Minnesota, and it was really Minocqua, emailed us something about, we were talking about frost depth earlier, and he emailed us and says, NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has a website that lists numbers on frost depth taken by the Cooperative Observer Program and other observers, along with a lot of weather data, of course, from throughout the state.
Hmm. Okay, we'll have to check that. I know one time, there's two ways to get it. One way is to make measurements, and the co-op folks may have that, thermometers in the ground.
Basically. Oh, okay. Hmm.
The other is to infer it by looking at air temperatures and wind speeds and things like that, and there's some formula that you can use to calculate that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, and I actually made the mistake once of assuming that the frost depth was actually measured
in this
broad area, and then somebody pointed out, no, actually, those are actually calculated.
I like that.
And then they validated against observations and things that, too.
But I always thought the funeral, the cemetery officials, it was a great way to because, you know, in a cemetery...
almost daily contact with what it actually is in that location. Yeah.
Yeah, they're digging a grave someplace.
Right. Yeah, they sure are. Well, thanks again for that. You can join in, too, by the way. The number 1-800-642-1234. If you'd like to post a photo on our Facebook page or a question on our Facebook page, please feel free to do that. You can go to The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. And post there. And we have some photos. One, which is pretty interesting. Oops. And then I just went and lost it. But I'll get it back here. It was of some deer running around in Washington, D.C.
Reclaiming the city,
and
right?
Some pretty, look at that. There's three deer running running through the streets of Washington, D.C. and not running into any cars.
Cars at all.
At all, because there's a lot of snow. And here we have... a photo, kind of a cool photo from Carl, or is it Kari, who said a friend took this morning, probably over by Laval. And that looks like hoarfrost, would you say?
Yeah, sure does. So really hoarfrost covering a tree. It just looks like it's a painted white tree.
Yeah.
So hoarfrost develops how?
So usually, actually, I was looking for it this morning because it was kind of foggy up by us.
Yeah, we were 25 degrees.
Yeah,
same with us.
So just
foggy.
the same temperature. So when you have fog around or lots of humidity, when it impacts on objects, it freezes and forms a frost, and it just gets covered really gorgeously in detail, delicate detail.
And then it can accrete even further. If there's a little breeze that blows more of the water droplets by the already existing ice, it just starts to grow.
And it grows in a particular direction,
the direction of the wind
is coming from. Yeah,
right. It's really cool.
Yeah, really cool. And then Zach sent a shot of some northern lights taken from southern Door County, which is
awesome.
So that was, a couple of weeks ago that we were seeing the northern lights down here, right? That's not recent.
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I remember that now. Yeah. You're right. People were talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good...
We actually had a little. There were some clouds, but... Mm.
Yeah. But that wasn't recent, right?
No.
It was within the month, probably.
Yeah, within the month. Well, Tom in Tomahawk has something for us. Let's go there. Tom, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have something I've seen a few years ago, and it's bugged me ever since. One of the coolest things I've ever seen. I was out canoeing on a small river, nice summer day, about 80 degrees, light winds, and all of a sudden I heard a buzzing sound in about, maybe 15 feet in front of the canoe. A little, it was like a tornado came up about 5 feet high, maybe a foot and a half, 2 foot diameter at the top. Lasted about 30 seconds and then slowly dissipated. I guess I'm kind of wondering what dynamics would cause that, first of all. And secondly, is that something that, if I would have paddled into it, would have had enough force to maybe flip the canoe?
I don't know.
It sounds like a water spout.
Yeah, it sounds like a little water spout. And as you're talking about it, Tom, I'm just wondering, it's the first time this ever came to my mind, because we've heard things like this before, and I've always felt mystified. Maybe this is the equivalent on a river, you were on a river, I think you said, right?
It was a little small Tomahawk River.
Yeah. So you're on a river. I wonder if it's the equivalent of what we see as sort of leaf devils or something like that, in the fall. They don't get to very big depth, but occasionally one will last, like at the bus stop, it'll last 20 seconds, and it'll really kind of catch your attention. But it's trying to lift more substantial things like leaves than it is just a little column of water vapor. What time of day was it?
Mid-afternoon. 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe there was a little...
quite light.
Yeah. Were you coming around a bend or something, maybe?
No, it was right on a straight stretch.
Coming out of shade or sun?
It would have been shade and sun, high trees.
That might be it. I wonder if the shade and sun difference might be enough to kick up a little gust that just happens by geometry of where you were to have a little bit of a vortex nature to it and brought a little bit of water up from the river. That's the only thing I can think of.
And what was the height of the shoreline? Was it gradual or was it like a 2 feet cliff?
It was gradual.
Gradual?
Yeah, gradual,
okay, yeah. Just wondering about, dynamically.
Same thing there, too,
something.
Very cool.
You probably wouldn't have tipped over the canoe.
Yeah,
a five-footer.
No.
Right, yeah. But I wouldn't have pedaled into it to verify that.
No, no, I would have, Tom, because I would have been confident of that, and then I would have been able to say to everybody I told the story to that I survived a transect.
Clearly, you don't have expensive fishing equipment.
That's right. I know. That would have been the smart move.
There you go. Tom, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. No way am I going to. Yeah, in a canoe with a bunch of expensive rods and reels.
Yeah. Reels, yeah. No,
no, no. No.
I don't like trying to get back into a canoe after you tipped either. It's just not fun.
Well, one of my favorite parts of the state is Barnes, Wisconsin. And here's Teddy from Barnes. Hi, Teddy.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What have you got for us today?
I was just making a comment on the snow level. I plow snow in Drummond, Cable, Lake Owen, Lake Nemecogon, and all that, and, of course, Barnes. And we do have probably 8 to 10 inches of snow on the ground, so there's lots of snow for skiing and snowmobiling.
Oh, good. Oh, great.
Helping everybody out. And then, we cut some trees down last week, and we're able to pop the stumps right out of the ground. There's hardly any frost up here.
Wow. Oh, there isn't much frost.
No, and then you missed out, Larry, because we caught a whole bunch of northern on the middle of Claire Saturday.
Oh. Do you plow on Pease Road?
Yep.
Okay, well, then you're helping me out, Teddy. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, glad to hear that there's that there's some snow up there.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a good gradient if you look at the snow on the ground map. That, you know, by us it's only 1 or 2 inches or so, and then by the time you get to far northern Wisconsin, it's 1 to 1.5 feet. So
okay, so
it'd be good. It'd be nice to
so
see
the Berkey
go on.
The Berkey should be fine then.
Well, that's what we're hoping.
Oh yeah, it'll be it should be great.
Yeah.
All right. Teddy, thanks.
Well, get up there and ice fish.
Yeah. it's time to get up there, that's for sure. And I'm going to do that. Gary in Rice Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I have a question for the weather guy.
Yeah.
And it concerns the consensus of his colleagues. I have heard a figure several times in the last few years that 97% of climatologists worldwide believe that global warming is real and it's caused by man burning fossil fuels. My question is, where does that figure come from, and is it still valid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still valid. It may even be a little higher, maybe up to 98%
now. Yeah, I bet
now.
It is. I bet
it is. And it often comes from surveys and then reading peer-reviewed literature to see what people are saying about what the current changes are and what's causing them.
Yeah, and it's broader than just climatologists. That it's also broadly atmospheric and oceanic scientists.
Right,
yeah,
right.
So it's a big community around the world. So, yeah, I think Steve's right. I think that percentage has gone up. There are a few outliers, but they are really outliers now.
Yeah.
They don't often present an argument that makes that much sense.
So there you go. Except we're still talking a lot about it.
Well,
we still are, and it's really sad, I think, that, yeah. You know, we don't, you know, when the science is so strong in one direction, whether it's climate change or whatever, that we don't say, okay, let's make decisions based on this strong evidence and agreement on the science and argue about what, if anything, should be done,
right.
Rather than throwing red herrings into the science, which just seems to keep us from progressing forward as a nation.
Yeah, we were just talking in class about the Montreal Protocol, about the ozone, and how that was a great triumph of how science informed public policy. And it was a time when public policymakers around the world were ready and willing to accept the advice of scientists, including in our own country. That was President Reagan's term, 1987.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So the notion that we just don't even accept the broad scientific consensus, near unanimity, is absolutely wrong.
Dick and Nina has something for us. Hi, Dick. Thank you for calling.
Well, hi. I do have a question for your weather guy. It's something I've been wondering about for a long time. I walk my dog within about a half a mile of a major interstate with a lot of traffic. Some mornings, I can hear the traffic as though it's right next to me. Other mornings, it seems like it's miles, the sound is miles away. I'm wondering what factors influence that propagation of sound.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, we had the same thing. I noticed the same thing when we moved into our house about 10 years ago. And we moved in the summertime. You couldn't hear this highway, Highway M, that runs, you know, north part of Madison. And then in the wintertime, when you have the right temperature structure in the atmosphere that it allows sound waves to propagate, all of a sudden I'd go outside and it sounds like the highway is just like two neighborhoods down.
You don't have any leaves on the trees.
You don't have, right, yeah, you don't have any leaves on the trees. So, yeah, I mean, the temperature structure of the atmosphere, I mean, the wave propagation, sound propagation in the atmosphere is a function of the temperature and also the wind direction. So.
Yeah, and if you, in the wintertime, as Steve's pointing out, I notice the same thing at my bus stop. After we have a fresh snow, I can hear the bus coming from 5 minutes away. In the summer, it sneaks up on me. And usually that's the case. And in the wintertime, it's easier to have what's called an inversion in the lowest part of the atmosphere, where the temperature is actually coldest at the ground and it warms up a little bit as you leave the surface. And that allows the propagation of sound waves to go a lot farther than it does under normal conditions when there's no temperature inversion, such as at midday in the summertime.
Yeah.
Does barometric pressure have anything to do with that?
I think there's a coincidence between high barometric pressure and the tendency in the wintertime to form a temperature inversion, but they're not really connected any more than circumstantially. So,
okay.
Yeah, there might be some connection in a statistical outlay, but not really because there's a physical connection.
Okay.
I mean, pressure does that's what allows the sound waves to propagate. But
yeah.
I think the pressure differences that we would see, you know, throughout a day probably don't really
small,
impact on it.
Sure.
Small.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dan in Muskego was wondering about education when it comes to being in your business or more in the business of being a weather forecaster. What kinds of training, what kinds of coursework should his high school child be looking at and for colleges?
Yeah. I think some really good things to focus on are mathematics skills, and if a young person has a chance to take a physics class in high school, that would be a good idea as well. We require a physics, two-course physics sequence for our majors at undergraduate level, and a three-course sequence in calculus. So those are, because we use it. It's not to weed people out. It's because you use it all the time, the way one thinks about the atmosphere and how it works. So those are probably the two biggest ones that I'd say. And then a third one, I guess, I'd put on the shelf as well, maybe right at the front of all those, learn how to communicate well, writing and orally, especially writing, I think, in school. You don't have as many opportunities for oral communication, but learn how to write, and don't take it for granted at a minimum.
And I would only add, get a weather station and make observations, because that feeds the curiosity of,
that's
like,
right.
What the heck is going on here?
Absolutely, yeah. Be interested in the obs.
Then they could come and take my radio class and get their oral communication requirements.
There you go.
That's right.
There you go. We're still waiting for our grade. But he doesn't want to report it to us.
Well, it does surprise me. That doesn't really surprise me. I look at the people I see here, the weather forecasters on television here, as an example, are really quite good, I think.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, and again, communicating and the science as well.
Yep. Yeah. And they're under pressure for communication, man. They got 90 seconds to deliver sometimes a really interesting and complex forecast, and they do a darn good job of that.
Yeah. I'm always amazed that I rarely hear anything approaching that at all. It's always very, very, very straightforward. Well, I want to give, we've got a comment from, or a question from Lyric in Blanchardville, and maybe we've got time to answer that question. I don't know if we can get Lyric up here. Yes, we can. Let's do that right now. Lyric, you have a quick question.
Hi, thank you. I'm an artist trying to understand more about science, and my question is about water loss and climate in the air. Is the sum total of the water that remains in the ocean, the earth, and the air changed, but overall the balance stays the same, or are we actually losing water where there's, you know, deserts opening up in Africa and things like this?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a great
very
question.
Good question.
Yeah, and so I'll answer it quickly. In our timescales of human life and human existence, it's probably pretty balanced. Yeah. So if we're gaining water vapor in the atmosphere, it's probably from evaporation. It's over the oceans. On, you know, the history of Earth, then it is changing. We're losing, you know, the atmosphere gradually out to space. And it's the question of, where did water actually first come from?
Yeah, right. It's extraterrestrial.
They think it was extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
So
we definitely gained water at one point, according to astrophysicists. And whether we're losing it gradually, I think, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But on the time scales that we're going to be dealing with our lives, is probably balanced.
Yeah, and probably many that. Generations downstream, I'd
yeah,
say, too. I mean, this
so.
Is a long, long time. You can assume it's balanced for 1,000 years or thousands of years.
There we go. Thanks so much, Larry. That was a great question.
It is a good question.
Good,
yeah.
And a good
artists always
in.
Come up with good questions.
Yeah.
Because they observe carefully.
Yeah.
Well, guys, it'll be another month. We'll see you in February.
That's right. You want us to make another forecast about lakes or things?
Yeah. Give us one. What's it going to be like the rest of the week?
I'll make a prediction for the end of February and
all
the
right.
beginning of February. One, John will complain about February 2nd.
That's
and
correct.
And the other thing is there'll be
that
more daylight at the end of February.
Yeah, it's already a nice amount. The rest of the week will be okay, except for today.
John Martin and Steve Ackerman, our weather guys, they'll be back the end of next month, and we'll do it all over again. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us on the Ideas Network.